The person whom you're trying to reach is currently unavailable.
This is Will's Band of the Week for March 14th, 2021. And welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Jeremiah from the Santa Fe Bureau.
Hello, everybody.
And special guest, Ben from The Lodger. Hey, Ben.
Hello. Hello there. Nice to be here.
This is so great. What a fun thing to have gotten into contact with you. So, you know, it's funny because we've been doing this podcast since 2009. And right. when I heard from you, I thought, okay, we must have featured one of their albums a long time ago. And then I looked it up, and your first two albums were, I think, 2007, 2008, maybe?
Yes, that's right.
And then I think you had a 2010 album. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that's about right, yeah.
And I think we have not actually talked about your band on the podcast. And it's an omission because I was a big fan of those early albums.
And, yeah, that's nice to know. It's nice to know someone was.
Yeah. In fact, so my kids were like under 10 years old at the time.
Right.
They've all been, you know, they're all big music fans now. And they all, when I heard from you, I mentioned to them, hey, you guys remember this band, The Lodger? And they're like, yeah, I think so. And my old favorite, I think my favorite track was A Free Period.
All right, that's nice to know. I always like it when people like the sort of slightly more obscure ones. I don't, like, it's just interesting to me because everybody, most people like the good old days, the song we did, which is, you know, it's the one, if you go to Spotify, it's the one that's got the most plays and stuff. But it's nice to know that people know the more obscure ones that I'd thought people had forgotten about a bit or something. So that's nice.
So I had to refresh my wife's recollection because she remembered the band, but she said, I don't remember what they sound like. So I played the first part of that song and she said, oh, what a great song. So, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You've got a new fan. You've made me a new fan there.
Yeah. So we've got a lot of fans here. So let's do this. Let's burden you with a quick special feature and then we'll talk about your new album. All right?
Cool. Yeah, go for it.
So here we go.
And now it's time for the Death of the Week.
There was a Death of the Week this week, and it was the guy who invented the cassette tape.
When was that? Or, I mean, when did he invent it?
His name was Lou Ottens from the Netherlands, and he recently died at the age of 94, I believe. And the date given for the invention, or maybe this is just when it became popularized or whatever, was 1963. So those of us, you know.
That was like before the 8-tracks then.
Right. Well, people.
So the 8-track, like they put in, you know, into production midway into that after 10 years. That's interesting.
So people of our age who are music fans would have a history with the cassette tape. And there's an NPR article, and it talked about how mixtapes became this big thing among music fans. And you know, when we didn't have computers back then, that's what you did. You made it. Manually made a mixtape. Right? I used to call them party tapes. And I would
party tapes or girlfriend tapes, right? That's the way to like win over girls. And
I was just thinking the same thing, actually. I think I utilized that method myself at some point.
Yeah,
to woo the ladies.
So did you have Ben, do you have a history with cassettes?
Yeah, I had absolutely loads of them. I used to have this funny thing actually where I I would know what was on the tape just by looking at the tape. It didn't have to have anything written on it. It's just I had lots of different like manufacturers of tapes, but I just knew what was on that tape without any sticker being on it. And my mum used to think that was weird, but I just had such a knowledge of all my tapes just by the, you know, this is a Maxell one and it's got that album on it or something. I used to like the way you could fit a whole album on one side and maybe get a couple mm-hmm. of extra songs on the end, like a B-side or something.
That's yeah, we've talked about that before. I think Barrett from our podcast was saying that he remembers having an album that he recorded on a cassette, but it didn't have enough room on quite, you know, maybe it was a little more than 45 minutes long or whatever. And then the song just cut off. And then that was kind of how he knew the song. It just as a norm, it sounded normal to him. That's just how it ends.
yeah. And it used to be annoying when you were using a personal stereo and the batteries would go down. Just the music would just slow down and then disappear. Batteries run out.
Right.
And you could only really carry one or two tapes with you. Like, you couldn't have like a, you know, 20 tapes in your pocket or something. So you had to listen to one album for ages. That's strange.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's and then interesting.
The different like qualities, right? Like you could get cheap ones and you can get the more expensive ones with whatever
silver or something.
Yeah, the Maxell, the chrome ones, like were they really better? I don't know. Maybe they were. I don't know.
Yeah. There was I
remember that.
I don't know, some quality difference between them. But there used to be Dolby, of course. You could put Dolby on there, make sure it's...
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
well, so I guess we all are a little nostalgic about cassettes. And they haven't... Yeah. You know, they still... you know, people put things on cassette. Our colleague Jason puts out a lot of cassette releases of his own and other bands. And... So there's still something about it. I think it probably is similar to the revival of vinyl records. People like to have something in their hand, you know.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I've often wondered what it is about those things that seem to be coming back. And I don't know. I think a lot of youngsters buy vinyls just sort of have the slip buy a vinyl record just to have the sleeve. Or something, mm-hmm. and they just listen to it off Spotify anyway, or something. I don't really know.
Sure.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure if a lot of these people actually have record players, or they're just having it as a sort of artifact. I'm not sure.
Hard piece, like an extra to the digital.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
yeah.
Maybe they have a record player and they pull it out at parties and stuff. But
yeah, exactly.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the tapes are a big thing now at shows. Yeah, where they were when shows were happening.
Yeah, I was quite interested in doing our new album on cassette, but I think in the end we didn't bother doing it. But I considered it just as a nostalgic thing, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
Ben, we should talk about
peace, Tape Man. Mm.
Yeah, Ben, we should talk about your new album. How did it come about? You know, what were you doing in the 10 years between albums?
Yeah,
and what made you decide to put one out?
Yeah, I think after the third album was in 2010, like you said earlier, and that was called Flashbacks. I think we'd done that one, and then we'd done loads. I mean, we'd done the things that bands always do, they go on tours, and I don't know, we were on a big sort of cycle of stuff. And then at the end of it, I just thought, I'm a bit tired now, I wouldn't mind having a bit of time off from this. So I felt like maybe we'd done. I needed a bit of a songwriting kind of sabbatical, I think, as well. I just needed to refresh myself a bit. I actually did another band quite soon after that called The Birthday Kiss, which was just a side project thing. It was one 7-inch single out there. That was about, I think, 2013 that came out. And we did a Christmas song, actually, as well, that was on a couple of compilations. It got played on the radio in the UK a bit as well. But that was me and my partner of the time called Sarah, and she was on the vocals. But the music was basically the rest of the lodger, but with a different singer. So we did that for a little bit. That sort of got me a bit more excited because it was a new approach of doing the same thing, you know, having a female singer instead of me and stuff. So that reignited my songwriting a bit. And then I joined another band for a bit as well called This Many Boyfriends. I don't know if you've heard of them. They were a British band. That was named after a Beat Happening song, I think. This Many Boyfriends Club. There's a song called that. Anyway, this band called This Many Boyfriends, and I toured with them a little bit as well. This is a long story, but I did stuff like, I did quite a few different bands in the ensuing period. Plus, I more sort of practically, I set up a little music tuition business as well. So I'm a private music tutor as well as being a pop star, pretend one. I set that up. So I've been sort of concentrating on getting the other aspects of my life in sort of order, really, I suppose. And then I want to say lockdown made me really creative, and I got back with my old mates and we did an album. It was kind of a bit before that. I think we got offered a gig in Cologne in Germany in 2019, The Lodger, just by an old fan who wanted us to get back together and do a gig in his bar kind of thing. So we just thought, oh, why not kind of thing. So we went over to Germany and did a gig, and we enjoyed it, and we just sort of thought, well, why don't we get together and record a couple of tracks or something. And then I looked through loads of old hard drives and realised I'd written about 40 songs over the last 10 years I haven't really done anything with. And I just thought, well, should we sift through these and see what we think are the best ones? So we sort of cherry-picked it down to about 15 songs or something out of those 40. And then this was the beginning of 2020, COVID-19 sort of lurking. But we decided to get together. The drummer of the band is called Bruce, and he's got a shed at the bottom of his. Is shed the same word in America where you have like a kind? It's like a sort of very small garage thing at the bottom of the garden. Mm-hmm. So he's got his friend built it at the bottom of his garden. He teaches drums in there, so he's a drum teacher as well. So, but he's got his drum kit set up in there. So I got the band together. There's only three of us, so we just got in this little shed, got some microphones, because the other thing I did in the last 10 years actually was produce some bands and stuff as well. Actually, I've recorded quite a few sort of local Yorkshire based bands, so I've got quite into that. So I thought, I'm going to record this myself as well, because we've used producers usually in the past. I thought, I'm going to record this. So I took all these microphones into the shed, and we spent 2 weekends in a row really intensely rehearsing these songs, and then recorded the rhythm tracks to them. So we recorded the drums, the bass and the rhythm guitar, and then like as we were finishing, the announcement came that the UK was going to go into lockdown for the first time. So it was in pretty much exactly a year ago, sort of this week ish so we were like, well, thank God we've got that done. So we just got it done in time, basically, because then after that, we couldn't actually meet up for a long time after that. So I took all my microphones home, and I set it, I've got a room, the room that I'm in, if I showed you, I've got loads of music junk everywhere. And I've just, got loads of keyboards and various bits and pieces. And I just added everything else to the album in this room. So I added all the guitars, the synthesizers, everything like that, all the vocals. And then I mixed it all. So I spent the lockdown period on my own, making it sound like an album. So yeah, that's the story so far.
Well, it sounds great. I mean,
thank you. Yeah, I think that's the other thing I was a bit worried about, that because I've done it myself, I've recorded other bands, but I've never recorded a project of my own of this scale myself. So I was kind of a bit nervous that it wasn't going to be sound professional enough or whatever, but I seem to have got away with it.
Oh, I sure think
Yeah, it sounds really good.
Yeah,
cool. Thank you.
It's such an interesting mix, the new album. First, congratulations on the new album. It just came out on Friday, and everyone should go out and, is it on Bandcamp?
It's on all of them, Spotify and all those streaming services. It's on Bandcamp. It's a bit of a, I mean, you may ask me about this later, but it's a co-release between four different record labels, actually. So there's four different Bandcamps or whatever selling it at the same time in different parts of the world. So it's quite confusing, but yeah, you can get it on Bandcamp. It's on 12-inch as well, but there's not that many copies left of it, but you can still get it from a shop, a Bandcamp that's based in Italy and one that's based in the US. And one that's based in the UK, so they've still got a few 12-inches left. If you want to get hold of it,
so that we don't forget, we should tell people right now. The band is The Lodger, and the album is called Cul-de-Sac of Love.
Yes.
And when you hear the samples we're going to play, you'll definitely be wanting to go out and get it in some form.
Yeah, definitely. So it's such a good mix of, like, you know, yeah, guitar rock, but then there's even, it seems like on this compared to your previous work, that there's more maybe synth pop kind of, like,
yeah, I mean, some,
yeah, no, I just really like how this album is a good mix of, like, guitar rock, and then it has a little more, it seems like, synthesizer than the previous work, and kind of more, you know, diversity of sounds, you know, different types of songs. But
yeah, I mean, I'm for some weird reason, I've started, well, whenever I go into a junk shop or a charity shop, you call them here in the UK, I, if there's any keyboard or anything that makes a noise, I tend to buy it, regardless of what it is. So I've got all these, like, little Casio keyboards and stuff, and they crop up on the album. There's, like, little, if you listen to the little bits of organ in the background, it's usually off a Casio tone organ or something from the 80s. I also used a lot of samples of Mellotron and stuff like that. I mean, I don't obviously have a Mellotron, because I haven't got £50,000 worth of the cost in the bank. So I've used samples of you know, like, strings off Mellotrons and stuff like that, and string synthesizers and things. Yeah, I mean, it is. I think with the previous albums, what happened was I wrote some songs, and then we went into a recording studio, and because recording studios are very expensive, and everything we've done has been quite low budget, we've just gone in there and recorded everything quite quick, and there's not really been much chance to sort of do huge amounts of overdubs and things. But when you're doing it on your own, you've got much more time to mess about and experiment with various sounds and stuff. So I did that a bit more, sort of layering guitars, and, you know, layering about 8 different acoustic guitars on top of each other and stuff like that, to just experiment with the sound of that, and you know, pedals and all sorts of stuff, all sorts of things like that. So, I mean, my music taste is pretty diverse anyway, and it's probably more diverse now than it was 15 years ago or whatever, so that's probably explains it as well. I'm not so just into, like, you know, Buzzcocks and things like that. Like, I used to be really obsessed with sort of a very sort of new wave kind of thing, and indie pop and stuff like that, but I think I'm a bit more, my scope's a bit bigger now of sounds that I enjoy.
So
yeah,
now,
like, given track 4 is more almost like kind of dancey or disco almost, you know.
Oh yeah, that one.
I'm
yeah.
Over this, yeah.
Yeah, that's because that one was, I think I decided to write a song with 2 chords in it, because I think being a music, I've been, you know, I've got a degree in music and things, so I know a lot about harmony and chords and things, and I just thought, well, just because I know this stuff, why don't I just make it incredibly simple? It's just got 2 chords in it. It'll sort of force me into doing something different. So I set myself that restriction, and I sort of came out with that. And I suppose, yeah, it's a bit sort of disco. Nile Rodgers, I'm a fan of his guitar playing and stuff. So that's kind of,
yeah,
probably came out there a bit. So, yeah.
Well, maybe that's a good lead-in. Should we play some of that track?
Go for it.
This is number 4. I'm Over This, Get Over It. We'll be right back. definitely does not sound like it was recorded in a shed. I mean,
I was just thinking that. I'm thinking that sounds quite good, actually. I'm surprised how good it sounded. It doesn't. I mean, the bass and the drums are recorded. I mean, that one is a little bit more loop-based, actually, I think. I recorded the drums quite in bits, I think, and I did the bass line is funny because it's actually exactly the same all the way through the song. If you listen to it, it's just two bars of music, I think, over and over again. Yeah. That was another like restriction. I sort of thought I'll just have the same bass looping throughout the song and hope that it keeps being interesting somehow. It's quite difficult to do when when it just is so static to make it actually good. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
no, I like it. I like the diversity on the album a lot.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, with your earlier albums, you didn't, those weren't self-recorded. You went into studios with people.
Yeah.
Because one thing, and this is, I think this album is consistent in that way, that I've always liked the sound of the recording. So in addition to, obviously, you're a great songwriter, but the way that everything is almost all out in front at the same time, like the bass just punches through so well, and the drums are, everything is just really out there. It's like it's like everything is in the front of the mix, and it all sounds so good.
Yeah, cheers. I think sometimes when you've got very few elements in a song, it can make everything, it sort of makes it sound bigger, even though you've got less in the song. You know, if you've just got the core elements, they sort of punch through. But if you're trying to do a wall of sound with millions of instruments, it's very difficult to get that distinction between things. But I think I went quite minimalist with that song, so it's only got maybe 4 or 5 elements to it or something like that, so he sort of cuts through a bit more basically.
So then when you if you go out and play these songs live and they all have a lot more than 3 pieces, so how do you do that? Do you just play a more minimal version, or do you bring along some effects and to mix in?
I've been worrying about that a little bit. But we've actually, the other day someone offered us a gig in the south of France. I'm starting to think maybe we need to, because we're going to start getting offered some gigs now that we're back in the public eye a bit more. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking over the last couple of days how we're going to do this live. We've got another member of the band that lives in Berlin, actually, called Tim, and he usually does the extra guitar on live. Mm-hmm. So that's okay. And he can probably play a few of the little synth parts and stuff like that. I think I'll have to be quite creative with things. I think with the effects on the guitars and stuff, maybe, like, I'm not sure. I'll have to think about it. But it's some of it will have to be a bit more compact. I suppose it's a bit like bands that, famous bands from the past that have only got one guitarist, like the Smiths, for instance, just popped into my head that when the Smiths played live, a lot of the time it was just Johnny Marr, but he'd put loads of guitar parts on the records, and he managed to recreate it somehow. So sometimes I have to kind of do a bit of an amalgamation of all the parts that you've made into one thing. So
well, it's another creative process, I guess. Some whole Indeed. Different thing from the recording, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Can't wait to see you all live. So
I can't wait to. We've only been to the US once, and it was just the East Coast. And it was like a really quick jaunt. So hopefully one day we'll be able to come back again.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
So do you have a track you'd like to feature?
Yeah. I don't know. Let me think. It's been difficult to pick the singles and sort of pick the tracks that I want to promote with it, because they're all quite different. As you're saying, it's quite difficult to know what are the standout ones, because I mean Stop That Girl is the one that's very synth pop, and that's completely different to the other songs. The one you've just played is quite different to most of the songs on the album. I think my personal favorite one is probably I Don't Want to Be It, it's called. That's the, I think it's the 8th song possibly.
All right, let's play that one.
Yeah.
To lose control, I just wanna be
Yeah, love it.
Cool, thank you.
Very nice. Really fun. Yeah, I enjoy it.
I think anybody who's listened to The Lodger over the years, like, the strength, obviously, I think, is that you can write the hooks. There are just so many catchy hooks. Mm-hmm. And so if you'll indulge me, I just think you mentioned this track already, but I think we really have to play Stop That Girl. It's just impossibly catchy. So
go for it.
Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah. So your friend on Monday, she said you look like hell. She said you'd gotten over me as well. I think I must be dreaming, or simply waking up. Something tells me I've not had enough.
Stop That Girl. The album is Cul-de-Sac of Love by The Lodger. And Ben is here with us. Oh, I just love that. It's I don't know. What else can I say?
Well, yeah, that's a bit of a strange one, that song, because obviously it's the only song on the album that's only got me on it, actually. It doesn't have the other members of the band on it. So, because it's all electronic instruments, really. So
yeah,
doesn't have to have anyone else on it, really. I've been wanting to do something like that for ages, a sort of synth pop thing, but I sort of didn't dare do it with The Lodger before because it's so different to the other stuff, but I thought I might as well give it a go. So yeah, it's got drum machines and synthesizers and samples and all sorts of stuff on it. So, yeah.
I love the piano solo, you know, where it's like it sounds more like a piano.
I was going to say I sampled one piano note off a song and then just played it on a keyboard. You know, like in the old fashioned, well, the early days of sampling, people used to just take a very small amount of music and play it through a synthesizer or something. Mm-hmm. So I did that with that, and I don't want to reveal what it is in case someone asks me to pay for it or something, but it's just one piano note off another record. So yeah, and I just played it all the way up the keyboard. There we go.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, it's an outlier in that, you know, the rest of it's a lot more guitar based, but it fits in just fine. You put it right in the middle, and it's just.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought I'd get away with it if I put it in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what my feeling is. Yeah.
You can't put it at the end, or it just sounds like it's tacked on. You know, the
no
you can't
have... the end the song on the end is the sort of country influenced one, and I did that because I always like it when an album has a bit of a light-hearted song at the end. I don't know. It just seemed so. It's a bit kind of like you don't want to end it on too much of a dramatically kind of miserable note sort of thing. So I thought I'd just give it a bit of light relief at the end.
Yeah.
Silly one.
Yeah. Leave people not. You don't want them to be too take it too seriously or be too somber or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, congratulations on the album. And
Thank you very much.
We've really been enjoying it. So so the album is Cul-de-Sac of Love. The band is The Lodger. And you can get it on all the streaming services, right? And then in various Bandcamp pages too. So we always like to try to, you know, promote the Bandcamp version and have people kick in a few dollars, you know, as opposed to you know, the streaming service where you maybe get like a penny or a penny. That's US. It's less than that, but
Or if you get the digital, you know, download from somewhere else, then go buy some merch or something too, you know.
There's all the other albums you could get as well. If you like this one,
exactly.
You've got the three in the past that you can. I mean, Slumberland Records was the US label for the first three, so you could get the other albums from there as well. We did a co-release with four. It's a bit strange, really. I just thought. Because what happened in the past was we released an album the first album, we released it in the UK, and then America wanted to do it, so we licensed it to a different label, and we licensed it to somebody in Japan, then we licensed it to seven labels altogether. And I just thought, well, why don't we just try to do it all at the same time and everyone sort of shares the resources of doing it, and rather than just, you know, loads of different contracts and things like that. So we did it as a co-release, which has worked pretty well. I think in this day and age, it's good if you sort of, if indie labels pool their resources together to achieve stuff.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much. It's a great album. Really
thank you
appreciate
very much.
It, so.
Thanks for having me. And I'm going to go and eat now because it's seven. It's nearly 8 p.m. in the UK and on a Sunday, and we have to get our sustenance now, so that's good.
All right. Well, thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and I'll look forward to listening to the podcast when it's available.
All right, great.
All right, thanks, Ben.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Cheers.
Well, that was great, right?
Yeah, how fun to have Ben. What a guy, so talented. Amazing. Like, we didn't even play the rockers almost, or like, you know, the first and second song, or like the real kind of rocker, you know, guitar driven songs right out of the gate. So those are great too. The whole album, it's very diverse, you know. So it's
right.
Go out there and buy it, people.
Yep. Hopefully people like that. They will pursue it further. And it'd be really cool if they came on a US tour. Or we'll have to go to the UK to see them, maybe.
Yeah, even better. Huh? Let's just do that. The Will's Band of the Week UK tour. We hit like a band every other night for 10 nights or something.
Is this the tour where we open for people and just sit up there and talk for a few minutes? The crowd would be gone. Everybody would just leave.
Right. Well, then it's like, then that's a good setup for the band. Cause then like everyone's just so excited for the band to come on.
Yep. All right. Well, we have a couple.
You can't have an opener that's better than the headlining band. Right. So,
right. That's true. That's an important rule. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. More fun music to talk about this week. I'm excited about both of these. Let's talk about Fake Fruit.
Okay.
Sounds good. It's kind of a fun band name. And when I heard them, here's a fun little thing. I don't think they sound like, you would not guess where they are from, like just upon hearing them, right? So let's play that little game where we play a track and then people will be thinking, I wonder where this band is from. So we'll just tell them they're called Fake Fruit. And it's a self-titled debut album, as far as I can tell. Fake Fruit. This is an album. I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like track one just rocks out of the gate so effectively that we have to play it.
Yeah, so, that's a great track, that's for sure.
So,
and their sound kind of made more sense when you read about their history of like where they're from and where they've been recently and stuff. So, but yeah, where they live now, it was like a little bit of a conundrum, like, huh, that's interesting. Why do they just don't associate their sound with where they're currently living?
Now we've got the listeners thinking. So here's track one called No Mutuals.
Thank you.
fake fruit. So
yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I was gonna tell Ben that "Stop That Girl" was one of my top songs of the year so far. I think this this one is also right up there. There's just something; it's just so rocking in such a cool way.
It's so like, yeah, it's really a jam, and then also, but it's got this almost like kind of Western cowboy sound almost, but then there's the reverb that kind of is like the tunnel kind of sound too. So it almost sounds like space cowboy jam or something.
Yep.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Interesting combination.
Punk shake, you know, right. Shake on top, you know?
Well, I think the singer sounds like Courtney Barnett. I kept thinking this is like Courtney Barnett singing in a punkier band.
Uh-huh, maybe that's what, you know, she has that, especially on certain songs, you know.
Right. It was, and I think maybe that's what threw me off when I thought, okay, they could be from Melbourne. They could be playing in Nicholas's backyard, you know. But no, San Francisco Bay Area. I saw them listed as San Francisco and as Oakland. So somewhere over in that area.
Right, yeah, that's what I think most recently. But then I think she's maybe originally or was in New York City and then in Vancouver for a while. So then some of that like kind of discordant kind of post-punk Canadian sound kind of, then that made a little more sense. Like, oh, okay, she was up like hanging out in Vancouver for a few years then it. And it seemed like not on Apple Music, but on other places, it seems like there was other releases, like not full albums, but some singles and some EPs, I thought, but when they were up in Vancouver, but then I don't know. Yeah, I was like, is this the same band? I think it is. It looked like the same band, the picture of them, but it has that little, you can kind of hear that Canadian influence, it seems like, on certain ways that they play the guitar and you know, it almost sometimes sounds a little bit like kind of like Palberta or even like a little pottery little bit or something like that. I don't know. So is what I got off of it too. Or a friend of mine actually just, you know, I sent it to him this weekend and he was saying that he was getting more of a Sonic Youth thing, which was, hadn't kind of caught earlier on. So I need to kind of think about that as next time I listen to it.
Yeah. And then there was, that's when I didn't think of either. And then I remember reading, I can't remember the bands now, but I've read a lot of band comparisons that I kind of don't get with them. And I think that's probably a credit to them that there's like little bits of a whole bunch of different things. And the way it all combines is pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. Some, one of them, I heard them compare, you know, like Pink Flag and Wire. And I was like, huh, I don't know. I don't get, maybe a little Pink Flag, but I don't get the Wire thing as much, I guess. But maybe. Everybody's got their own ears, so that's
right.
The fun of it. So, but it's a great album. I really liked it, and loved the art on the cover of the album as well. That's really fun.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
Very, very bright and colorful.
Definitely. Well, should we play another track?
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, gosh, I can't decide between 4 and 8. let's do 4, Old Skin.
That was a short one. Maybe we can give you a bonus pick since you picked such a short one. That's Fake Fruit. So there's a trivia item about this album. This is really? This is a phrase when you read the Bandcamp credits for bands. This is an ongoing phrase that you see very often. Mastered by Mikey Young.
Oh, okay.
And he's an Australian guy.
Really?
And he masters all the cool indie rock stuff. So now, the way I understand mastering, this is like almost the last step in the process of a recording. It's all mixed, and it's the final finishing touch on the recording. So I'm not really sure what he actually does, whether he puts like some kind of compression on it or like some EQ or something to just make it sound, just put a little edge on it or something. But he's obviously really respected among the indie rockers, because they all send their master tapes to Mikey Young to get mastered. So, and then, so I was looking this up to learn a little bit more about Mikey Young. He's a member of the band Eddy Current Suppression Ring, which we have talked about, and also the band Total Control, who I think we've talked about. So I'm gonna make a recommendation to Nicholas. The next recording you make, send it to Mikey Young. You probably won't charge that much, and just so you can say, mastered by Mikey Young. Maybe we could have a jingle. Nicholas's
right,
next
that's
jingle.
That's what I thought. We just need to send all our jingles to Mikey.
They'll sound so good then.
He'll be like, what?
Yeah. All right. Let's play another track. I'm going to go back to number three. I really like that one. It's called No Space for Residence. Fruit. So I'm going to make a request. The request is that South by Southwest 2022 happens and that Fake Fruit is there.
Exactly.
So there I can go. Make the request, right? I mean, we don't know if it'll happen, but we can make the request.
Exactly. Yeah. Where's the request line? We need to find that. I've got a list.
So they're doing,
I sure hope it happens. It's supposed to be happening right now on digitally, right? But I don't know how much of the music.
I think this coming week is the week, right? Yeah, and it's like all digital or all online or whatever. Obviously it's not going to be anywhere near the scale when they just do it virtually, but hopefully that'll help to sustain it for another year.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's a little harder to sneak in without a wristband when it's digital, though.
Right. It's a whole different deal. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, I know. I hope it happens next year. Goodness sakes. Yeah. 2 years ago, we were there right now on March 14th. We were there.
Right around this time. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's good. So, fun time.
Yeah. Yep. Well, bonus pick. Want to take another one?
Yeah, let's do it. I I really like this. This, you mean a bonus pick of Fake Fruit?
Yeah.
Or go to the next band. Oh, okay.
One more Fake Fruit track.
Yeah, I really like. I really like number 8, Yolk.
All right. Fun stuff. That's Fake Fruit.
Yeah, I could hear a little bit of maybe Sonic Youth in that one, I guess. I hadn't thought of it until my friend Dennis told me. So it's like, oh, this really reminds me of Sonic Youth. So yeah,
I think
it's
that,
interesting. There's
that guitar mix. is being played back by the bridge, or back behind the bridge. If that's right. Grant would tell me the right term for that. But yeah, and then the track that I recently played was had that kind of post-punky guitar sound from the Vancouver influence, right?
Yeah, definitely. And then there's even, I mean, like track 6 is kind of one of the outliers on the album. It's really stripped down and kind of almost like twee sounding almost, and or Frankie Cosmos, or maybe more like slacker rock, but, you know, kind of like Courtney Barnett, you know, and it sounded almost like a outtake of one of the songs that, off of the Courtney Barnett and Kurt Vile album, you know, yeah. It didn't quite make it on the, because it's kind of like them like talking back and forth to each other. It's like, oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of unpredictable, and that makes it fun. So,
definitely
check it out. Fake Fruit.
Yep. Go on Bandcamp. Buy it, people. Let's do it.
All right.
Well, wait, do we have one more? We are up to $$0 yet, or?
Well, I think we already are. I think
just with Ben, we were probably way over $0.
Yeah. Right. We were at the greater than $0 point just with Ben. But so now we're just it's all completely bonus material now. So this is a fun one because it's another example. And I hope other people experience this. Like if I recommend a band and you haven't heard it before, but, you know, I think it was like, We were narrowing it down. You know how competitive it is here. We had it narrowed down to like 3 things for the third band, and then you recommended this one. I'm really glad I listened to it. It's it's not quite exactly what I expected, which is always fun. I mean, nothing ever should be just how you expect it, right? But anyway, yeah. So let's turn it over to you to tell us about Claude.
Claude. Let's see. It's kind of a you know a group early of like one person where that really was, you know, the writer and everything, Claude Mintz, and they're from Chicago and Chicago area, and had been in another band called Toast before, and then they actually were going to get sued by Wonder Bread or something. So
that I read that couldn't really be serious, could it?
That seems like a joke to me.
It was probably like, well, we were worried about getting sued by Wonder Bread, but I think there were a couple of other bands also called Toast too, because I tried to find it and it was like, you know,
there's a few.
It was better probably just going back to the name Claude.
Yeah, exactly. And actually it's interesting, they're also the first artist to sign on Phoebe Bridgers' new record label. And what other little tidbits about them? And they're also in a band with Claro. I don't know. Did you ever listen to that Claro album?
Just
last
a little.
Year or the year before?
Yeah. It made a general positive impression, but I didn't listen to it a lot.
Yeah. So that's kind of that, you know, both of, you know, Claro and Claude are both kind of in that, you know, started making music in their bedrooms and, you know, bedroom pop kind of stuff, and then gets caught on the streaming stuff. You know, someone catches them and starts making them really famous, and or just, you know, they gets moving around between the young people, and so
yeah.
So it's just really you know, and both of them is actually kind of similar that, you know, both Claro and, or actually I didn't finish my thought on that. So Claro and Claude are both in that band Shelley. I don't know if you've listened to them at all.
I've read about it.
I think only two or three songs out, but I really like what's out so far. That's really, it's a good consortium of artists. So that's, I'm looking forward to them coming out with an album if possible, or if they come out with one, hopefully. And what's kind of similar with Claude and Claro, I guess, is it's both of them are kind of, you know, they're young, and kind of the lyrics are kind of talking about challenges in life and heartache and melancholy a lot of the time. But then the music somehow just makes me happy. Like it's kind of in a poppy form. Mm-hmm. and so even though the lyrics are kind of depressing sometimes, I really enjoy it. And it's helped me kind of smile here and there. So that's always a positive. So what did you think about the album?
I liked it. It's I think what surprised me is how it progresses. It starts off like it's going to be pretty poppy, like big poppy sounds. And then it kind of goes through this really interesting, you know, kind of adventure as it goes through. Not all the same at all. And, good songwriting, just, yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, I really like it. You know, it's not for every day, probably, think, you know, an album that not for all moods or anything, but I guess nothing is. But I just have really kind of come back to it on, you know, just to kind of lift my spirits and get me moving. So, yeah, do you have a track you want to pick, or should I pick one?
You should go first. I'll take the middle pick.
Okay, yeah, let me see. I like track two, Gold.
I know it's a problem, I like falling into your arms. And I know there's a reason that I always put up my guard. You like drinking and then taking things apart. too optimistic when I think that this will work.
Claude. The album, by the way, yes. We didn't mention the album title, did we? Super Monster. And it's also got a cool cover art thing.
Yeah,
right?
Awesome graphics. And their website is amazing, too. It's really kind of interactive and very cool graphics. Yeah, it's really. And that album or that song is kind of fits right into what I was saying earlier, where it just is like the lyrics are super sad and melancholy and kind of like someone kind of letting you down big time, but then the music is so like kind of up and bouncy that it still makes me smile somehow.
Right. So. Yeah, that's I agree with that. Another trivia item, of course, by context, people would have figured this out, but suburban Chicago, if you're in suburban Chicago, you kind of have to move to Brooklyn for indie rock stardom, right?
Right.
I mean, there's, you know, you hear about bands from Chicago, but maybe it's this way anywhere. Like, you don't really hear about bands saying, you know, we're from the suburbs, whatever. But Highland Park, Illinois is north of Chicago by maybe, I don't know, 30 miles or so. And I've always found that to be such an odd part of the country. Because I've been through, you know, some of these towns in northern Illinois just between here and Chicago.
Right,
and there are
is
these
it
really,
just like suburbia land?
Well, there are these odd towns where they're not strictly suburban, but they're kind of small towns where, and I guess maybe I'm focused on, I've been on like some commuter trains that go through those towns. They have commuter trains that, you know, go to and from Chicago because people commute pretty far out from Chicago. And it always seems like there's a train station and there's a few blocks of residences and not a whole lot else, you know.
So
you don't imagine you know, an indie rock scene. So it sounds like the move to Brooklyn for indie rock stardom was the right move. And
well, I think that they went Claude's. I read that they dropped out of Syracuse University, so I don't know if they went there to go to college.
Yeah, maybe it was. Yeah, it could have been.
Decided just to stay there and pursue music once they met other people there, and so.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, super fun.
What's your pick? I've got a pick that might be kind of an outlier, just because it's it doesn't have that same bouncy, propulsive element to it. It's the sensitive indie rocker track.
Nice,
but I think it's really good.
That.
It's number 6 called Anna.
Anna was driving on a Sunday afternoon, and I called her just past 2 to say, Anna, I love you.
That's Claude.
Yeah, that's a good one, huh? And that's, they say that it's that's featuring Nick Hakim.
Yeah, I don't. I have not heard of Nick Hakim before. Do you? Are you familiar with him at all?
I have not listened to much of his music. I know that I think he did like a Tiny Desk concert. I think he's in the DC area, and he's more kind of like R&B, I think.
Oh, interesting.
So I don't know, but he's young too. So they somehow ran into each other, and so yeah, it's nice to have him. I think doing some vocals on that. So yeah, that's a sweet one. Did you read about that one? What she writes about that song, she was saying that I was at a point in my writing where I was getting sort of sick of writing about my own life. So I imagine myself as a 40-year-old man who decides that he needs to leave his wife and go find himself.
that's pretty good.
Wow. If I was only that creative.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's cool. Very, yeah, very talented. I just am always just inspired, you know, both like, you know, with art like this, but also just in general, you know, when people are negative about the future, I'm always just like, wow, but the young people are so amazing and smart and, you know, cooperative, you know, like seem to be more collaborative and less competitive. And so I'm excited about the future, you know? And,
yep. But I mean, we still are maintaining our music fandom, you know, with the young people, which is great. Cause you know, I want to assure all these young people putting out great music that we are genuinely fans,
right?
You know,
you have it's some not like you've got old fans out there.
It might seem a little weird because we're not really the demographic that they're really aiming for, but, but boy, it's just, it's great art, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's just really inspiring. Like I'd way rather, you know, find some new, amazing, something new and fresh to listen to than, you know, the 18th album of someone, you know, usually. I mean, you know, there's definitely some.
We can listen to this or we can go listen to Frampton Comes Alive.
Right. And then you're always learning new things, right? Like, you know, new stuff, new lingo, new everything.
Right.
It's really, to me, I always love it. And it is a little funny sometimes, like when you're at like a show and you're basically most of the time I'm like the oldest one there.
Yep.
But that's all right. It's, you know, you just stand in the corner and observe and just have a good time.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of feeds into maybe the next track where it's, have you noticed all the youngsters now that they cuff their jeans, they roll up their jeans, they wear like dad jeans, like that's the new hipster thing, or maybe it's even beyond the hipster, not really hipster, but it's like the younger, even like 20-year-olds now, where they like wear really huge jeans that you have to like
and then use you
a
cuff
belt
them
on or something, like a big huge pair of like, I don't know, Dickies or something, or some not even that cool, just like some off brand, and then roll up your cuff the bottom of them. So that's like, so that just feeds right into number 5, Cuff Your Jeans. I like that song too.
Cemetery, getting older's getting scary.
It's a nice jam toward the end of that song too, that she kind of like gets moving on it. So
we are so far above $0 now. Like, the more I listen to that album, the more I like it.
Yeah, I think we need to charge for this podcast, I think.
We might need to, yeah. That's true. At a certain point,
send us some beers.
At a certain point, it gets so good that we have to start charging.
Well, it should be. It's like a wine club, right? So it's like they don't have to send us money, but if they sent us like good indie beers, some good microbeers, yeah, or some good whiskey, then, or scotch, then.
Right.
You know, then, once a year, even, we're not asking for too much. Just send us a bottle once a year or something, or six pack.
Yeah. Non-traditional methods of payment.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I guess this is sort of related to what we could have called a music news item. Did you read that Apple Podcasts is changing the terminology on podcasts so that instead of saying subscribe, they're going to change it so you don't subscribe, you follow. And the given reason for that was that people associate subscribe with having to pay, and therefore they want to have like two tiers. So I guess maybe the other way to look at it is that they're setting it up so that to actually subscribe is like for paid podcasts. I don't know. But anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting how just when things change or just linguistics change, like NPR does that sometimes when it's like, used to be like, this is Morning Edition. Now they just say, it's Morning Edition, or you know what I mean? They're like, or no, how do they put it? They change it in, anyway, you can just cut all this out.
It's a bunch of people wearing suits in a boardroom making these extremely important decisions about what word you should use to describe
something.
Right.
They're saying like, yeah, or like, it's Morning Edition instead of you're listening to Morning Edition or something. I don't know. I distinctly realized like, wow, all of the personalities on NPR switched, you know, with all the different shows, but how they do that.
There's another thing I noticed just recently, in a couple different places. I mean, I don't know if this is a trend, but it is referring to your co-host as he. So it would be like if we introduced the podcast and I said, "This is Will and he's Jeremiah." So now to me, that's totally awkward unless you have him, the other person, on a video and you're like pointing toward him and you say he. But if you haven't even introduced the person and you say he, it doesn't make sense. So there was my
right,
little, so I'm that's a trend that I'm not
interesting.
Liking.
Yeah. And that's so like kind of gender forward too, which just seems like opposite to where a lot of, you know, radio and things are going, you know, or just the way people talk about each other and stuff or label each other or however.
Right.
But
yeah,
I don't know if you want to, for extra money, like, should we play, one of the Shelley songs? Since that's Claude's in that.
Yeah.
That
if you can show me how to find it. Yeah.
Yeah. Just Shelley, Shelly. And I think that song Steam is really good. That's with Claro.
I found it. It's Steam with three E's in it.
Yeah. So this is the side band, or I won't say side band, but another band that Claude's in. With Claro and Josh Melling, which is a good friend of theirs, and Noah Francis Getzug? Not sure how to pronounce that, but yeah, this is a fun song. It's just an extra bonus track.
sounds good.
Yeah.
So the band is Shelly.
Hopefully
and,
they come out with an album.
Yeah, they've got, I guess they have two songs out now. That's one of them. So, well, they just have to keep putting out music and hopefully, you know, it gets popular.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think they've already got a pretty large following just because of Claro and Claude and the other musicians that already have their own kind of name for themselves. So, yep, hopefully they'll come out with an album. And yeah, what a that's, I think this week was a winner. We're winning.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're totally winning.
And go out there and buy the Lodger album and or some merch or something. And all three of these artists, just support them if you can afford to. So that's what that stimulus check is for, people. Go out there
that's
and
right.
spend at least half of it on Bandcamp.
Yep.
So
absolutely. Well, thanks, Jeremiah. Great to have you back again.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been a while, so it's good to be back on. It's just been, I've been listening, I think, more to like kind of like, I don't know, playlists and EPs, like and singles and stuff. So I had to kind of dig back into some albums to find full albums to bring to the podcast. But yeah, it's good to be back and good to see you and good to talk to everyone and have a great week.
Yes, everyone have a great week. Hope we're trending better, getting more vaccines. And
I got mine yesterday. I feel, man, it was hard to wake up this morning. And then it feels like somebody punched me in the arm pretty hard. But I was definitely super tired. Like it was really hard to get up this morning. But I'm glad I did. I'm alive.
Absolutely.
I'm vertical.
Yeah, that's worth it for sure.
Definitely.
All right. Let's talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, England, and Australia. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. All of our episodes can be found at willsband.net. To contact us, send email to willsband@yahoo.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.